All right, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today, my guests are Jasmine Hughes and Helen Newby. Yes, I'm trying something new today. This one's a two for one. Basically, I had two sort of shorter interviews, for both of which the song Peg was prominently featured. So I thought, you know, why not put them together? So we have Jasmine Hughes. She's a writer and journalist. Her work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Cut, Elle, Cosmopolitan, The New Yorker, and many others. And she won the 2023 National Magazine Award for profile writing. I've enjoyed her work whenever I've come across it, and thought we had a very fun chat. But before I share my conversation with Jasmine, I also talked briefly to Helen Newby. She's a cellist who does these arrangements of pop songs for cello that she posts on YouTube with all the squares. And she did one for Peg that's outstanding. That's what I played at the top of the episode. So definitely give that a watch on YouTube when you have a few minutes. But right now, I am going to play my conversation with Helen Newby, immediately followed by my chat with Jasmine Hughes. Enjoy.
Someone reached out to me about playing for a Zoom fundraiser for someone who was running for like New York City Assembly in like kind of Williamsburg area. And so I kind of asked what music they were looking for, and they said they wanted covers. And, you know, I'd done like some arranging before, but not really much for just me, just cello. So I was like, okay, how can I like make some covers that don't suck? Which I feel like, I don't know. You have to toe a line. You don't want to be super cheesy. There's always gonna be like a little bit of like a cheesy element to it. So yeah, I think the very first one that I did was Africa by Toto. And I think I did like Call Me Maybe also, just like threw some together for this, the Zoom fundraiser. And then my partner was really encouraging me to like do more of them. He's like, so we're going to like make, he immediately wanted to do the like multi-camera,
the squares
versions
thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'd like do the video thing. So we started doing that, I want to say like spring, summer of 2020. So it's been like a fun collaboration between the two of us. Like I do all of the arranging and recording and mixing, and then he does all of the video stuff. So it's kind of like, I mean, we're both musicians, like, and like suddenly had no work during the pandemic. And so we're looking for ways to fill our time. So like I got to, it was like a fun way to sort of build new skills, like for me doing more recording, and he was getting more comfortable with like video software. So yeah.
Great. Yeah. So how did you pick the songs that you wanted to do once you started doing them, you know, kind of regularly?
I mean, obviously just songs I like. Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember what we started putting them in this like YouTube playlist and called it like World's Greatest Songs or World's Best Songs or something like that. Yeah, I mean, anything that's like, I guess when I'm looking for songs to cover, I like something that where maybe the form evolves a little bit, or it's not like completely the same throughout. There's some like kind of interesting thing that happens. And if I can kind of, I don't know, listen along and like imagine like, oh, this could like work well on cello. I don't know. There's not like a super straightforward formula for it, but yeah, I guess something like for the most part, if it's something like there's certain genres that won't work super well. But I don't know. The cello is very versatile, I think. So I feel like it can kind of work in a lot of different settings.
Cause you're coming from a classical background, right?
Yeah. So yeah, classical background, and yeah, all the arranging stuff I've kind of just taught myself over the years. And yeah. And I don't know, listening to some of like the first covers that I did, I wouldn't say it's like painful, but I definitely, from a like recording perspective, it definitely kind of is. I mean, I'm still learning a lot and kind of just teaching myself. But when I first started, I didn't really have any idea what I was doing recording wise. And yeah, just kind of learning what kind of works well with arrangements. There's some stuff I've done where I'm like, like that maybe wasn't the best suited for cello. And yeah, so just getting a little bit better with recording and just also like figuring out like what I don't know the cello can do.
Do you think you hear pop songs differently because of your classical background? Like you might hear some of the more intricate pieces of a song, or you can hear the layers and the arrangement as a whole.
Yeah, a little bit. I know I feel like there's certain artists where, like, for instance, one artist that I've covered a few times is Beach House, and like a lot of their songs I feel like would work super well as covers. They often have these sort of like moving kind of like eighth note, 16th note pulse that goes throughout that like always like kind of works well on cello and sort of these like long like pads essentially.
Because her father was a
And
composer too, right? I believe,
my
like, sorry, not, was your father also? Because I believe the lead singer of Beach House, his father was a famous composer.
Oh, really? I mean, that
Yeah.
makes sense. There's like this these very kind of like minimalist kind of aspects to Beach House, and they really have like carved out their sound. And so yeah, they're one where I'm like, okay, they work really well for cello. And there's certain stuff where I'm like, this won't work. Like, I don't know, something that's like super percussive.
Right.
Like it might not work super well. Like my one thing that I like refuse to do in covers is like any kind of like percussion stuff on the cello,
I've
because I think it's horribly cheesy. No offense to anyone who is into that,
seen a few
but
people pull it off, but I know what you mean. Yeah, it's hard to pull off sometimes.
I'm just like, it's like not for me. So I'm like, okay, I'd rather like try to create something that sounds sort of like melodic out of a drum line. So that's interesting to know about Beach House. I didn't know that.
What's your favorite song that you've done?
So I do really like my Space Song cover. That one is one of my favorites. I one of the last ones I did, because I've like haven't been able to put out as many covers this last year, was Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap. I like that one. I also really like my cover of Jump by Van Halen.
Oh wow, I haven't
And
seen that. I gotta
that
watch
one, it was
that.
really, that one was really fun to do. And probably one of the hardest ones, just that guitar solo was really hard.
Yeah.
But I do really like the Peg one also. I feel like it's probably one of the less like popular ones that I've done, but it was really fun to do.
Yeah, let's talk about Peg. So why Peg? Why'd you pick that one?
Well, actually, Peg is, I think the, I don't want to say it's the first Steely Dan song I heard, because my dad did listen to some Steely Dan was when I was a kid, but I don't feel like it really stuck with me. But I remember like listening to that song sort of in like my early mid-20s, and I was like, oh, this is a good song. I feel like I've become like a Steely Dan fan sort of by proximity to really really big Steely Dan fans. Like my partner loves Steely Dan, but he's actually he I don't think he's listened to Peg like as much as some of the other Steely Dan songs, but I don't know, something about like the lore of that song also I just like find funny and appealing. And just knowing all of the things about the guitar solo, and it has like a great bass line. So yeah, there's just like so much going on in it that I thought it would be like a fun challenge.
So you're like a mid-level Dan fan. Maybe your partner's a little bit more of a Dan fan, but you know Peg, you know kind of a little bit about their history, and you thought it would be cool to do Peg as part of this project. Take me through your process. Where does it start?
So usually when I'm doing a cover, I'll kind of start with like the most sort of identifiable elements of the song. So that usually is like the lead vocal part. That's like usually kind of like the easiest thing to write out. That's what I did with Peg. And then, so I usually will kind of start with that and then kind of go to the bass line and then kind of work my way sort of like up in the register, I suppose. So, I mean, Writing out the baseline for this one was challenging, from what I remember, and then like learning it was really hard.
Why
So
is
I did
that?
that. What'd you say?
Why was it hard, the
Oh, it's just like, I mean, definitely not meant to be played on cello.
baseline? Okay.
And I decided that I wanted to like pluck it rather than bow it.
Because
I
he
think if
slaps the
I'd
bass in the chorus. This is part of the
exactly.
lore, which is that behind the Donald Fagen and Walter Becker's back, he
He was
slapped it.
slapping it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't bow it. So, which would probably would have been easier. Yeah, it's like I have to pluck this. So, yeah, and just like the chorus really hard, just like constant, like really fast 16th notes and kind of trying to emulate that sound. It was difficult, harder than the guitar part for sure.
Really?
I mean, that was tricky. I think I did this one pretty shortly after I did Jump, which was like a much more it maybe just because of the way it like lies on the cello, it was very hard to do. That's one of the hardest things I think I've covered. But I wouldn't say like this peg guitar part was easy, but I'd say the bass part was actually much more challenging.
Okay.
So yeah, process probably like vocal part, bass. Actually, I think Jake Graydon has like a transcription of his guitar part like on his website, like written out how to play it. So that was really helpful. And then probably after that was like all the Michael McDonald like background vocals.
I really appreciated you found a way to get those notes in there because it makes a difference. I mean, it does.
You gotta have those bellows in there. Yeah, I could not ignore those. Yeah, and trying to kind of identify, there's so many of him in there. I might have missed one, but I tried to get as many as I could.
I noticed you stylized the writing of Peg on the YouTube video. Were you trying to emulate the sound of Michael McDonald doing the back? Because that's how I interpreted
that must have been Pat. Like, that's my partner.
it.
Because he will like upload the videos and like write in all the information. So wait, I'm actually very curious what how he stylized it. Added his own little flair to it.
Yeah.
Was it in like all caps or
Yeah, it was
something?
in all caps and it was Peg and it was in a different font. So it looks like Michael McDonald singing. That's how I took it. Maybe I'm just
Amazing.
completely off base, but that's how
All credit to my social media manager
it
slash
came.
partner. But yeah, actually, my little fun fact is that so apparently Donald Fagen heard my cover, which was
What?
like, I know, I was like honestly slightly mortified. I don't think he hated it though. So actually, I found like this old email. So I guess like the background is that I have like a family friend who teaches this, actually he retired recently, but he taught this history of rock and roll course at Indiana University. And so I think through that he's kind of like met some various figures. And so apparently he knows Donald Fagen and he sent him my cover. Apparently after he got it, he said, actually the cello thing is pretty adorable. But I guess he didn't hate it, which I would take as like highest possible praise.
That's not easy to get a thumbs up from Donald. Like he's
I
a
know he's like,
tough critic. Wow.
yeah, he's like the last person I would want to see one of my covers.
Yeah, I'm perpetually mortified by what Donald thinks about anything that I'm doing related to his stuff. So, well done. Yeah.
Apparently after, I think before he saw it, he responded to the email and said thanks and never do this again.
Okay.
But
That's the
yeah,
Donald
he
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, the curmudgeon. But yeah, it's like, okay, he didn't like outright like hate it, so I'll take it.
Now, I noticed there were more squares for Peg than most of the other songs. Is that because it's just kind of like there are more parts to this song than the average pop song?
I'd say kind of usually I'll kind of start off with like I'll like set up my little template, and usually my default is like 7 or 8, and then I'll kind of like subtract or add as I go along, and just like hear more lines that I want to include. I mean, with that one there was so much going on, between like the lead vocals and then like all the background vocals, guitar, I think because I feel like maybe I did separate parts for like lead guitar and then like sort of like a rhythm guitar and then like sort of trying to emulate the like the drum line and the bass. So there was just like so many elements. Yeah, I think the most I've done at this point has been like 12 lines,
I
I
think
want to
Peg
say.
had 11 or 12.
Okay, yeah, so it was up there.
Yeah.
And then there's some I've done that have been like four. That's like probably the least amount.
Yep.
So
Wow. Yeah, you would never necessarily guess that just hearing Peg like on the radio or like at the supermarket, but it's quite there are quite a lot of moving parts to that song. And I like that
right.
you took that extra step to capture everything, from plucking Chuck Rainey's bass part to I mean you nailed the solo, the Graydon solo. I mean
Thank you.
you it was cool. What was the impetus to do at the beginning? You do that, like, what is it? I don't know what's called that sliding, not glissando. What is that called?
Yeah, that's the right word.
Is
Yeah.
it? Yeah, okay. I played viola for years, so I should be
Yeah,
more
you got it.
yeah,
Yeah, you
okay.
nailed it. I mean, when I get it, when I do these covers, I do sometimes I'll like take some like liberties and kind of add my own sort of like spin on it. But I don't know, something like that, like those little kind of like slides. Like I heard them when I was listening to it, and I was like, okay, I want to like try to capture that as best as I can, these like little kind of like guitar slides. So it's just trying to like get all the little fun nuances of that song.
Yeah, you did it. I have to say, I was a little disappointed that the song ha only like the number of views, and I know it's a crapshoot with the algorithm, but I feel like that one should have had a lot as much as some of the other ones. Like I saw Space Song had way more, but I don't know.
I
I'm
feel like it's
surprised.
just, yeah, it's the weird algorithm. I'm like not putting out cover these videos as much as I probably like should be. I think,
Yeah.
I don't know, from talking to people, it's like, oh, you need to put out content like every 2 days or something. But
Oh
like
God.
these, the covers take, if when I'm doing these like full songs, it'll take me anywhere from like 2 weeks to like a month to kind of get them, do all of the elements of it. But yeah, with like Space On and like I think the one that has the most views is Linger by the Cranberries. I mean, that one, I think someone just posted it on Reddit and it somehow made it to like the main page or like the main like music subreddit. And yeah, for some reason, like the Beach House ones have gotten a decent amount of views. I'm not really sure why.
Yeah.
But yeah, Peg needs some more love.
Would you do another Steely Dan song?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I feel like that would be fun. And I'm trying to think what would be a good one. Maybe like, I feel like Kid Charlemagne would be cool. I feel like that could work. Maybe like Green Earrings. I don't know. Those
Yeah.
are the ones that just I kind of pop into my mind, but I don't have to like listen closely,
Green
but I
earrings
think
might
those
be
were
hard. Yeah.
that would definitely be hard.
Cool.
But yeah, I would definitely do another one and not send it to Donald Fagen.
What has Fagan been up to? I don't know anything that he's been doing or saying. The thing about me as a fan of some, what I like to call like 56-year-old white guy music, yada,
Yeah.
is that I can't learn anything about them. There are so many. I just read a review in book form about Charlotte Shane wrote about an older book about the Beach Boys and like their various misfalls and how shitty and terrible they are. And I fucking love the Beach Boys, and it sounds like an amazing book, but I can't know. Like what I know about Brian Wilson and Mike Love's already bad enough. I cannot know any more about these perfect men who otherwise, these bad men who made perfect songs.
Right. Yeah. I completely understand. I mean, Mike, I'm with you because I'm also a huge Beach Boys fan, but like Mike Love is one of the most loathsome
Most
individuals in
disgusting
music.
humans to ever live, and you're like, ah, covering your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, Donald, he's been pretty quiet lately. They're touring with the Eagles, they're opening. And again, this was a time I was kind of critical. I said, you know, I don't want to go to that show. You know, I said that on the podcast. I said, I'm declining. First of all, because it's ridiculously expensive.
How
It's ridiculous. I don't want to
much were
see, you
the
know.
tickets?
It was in like, I don't know, it was like $400 for a decent seat. It's just like, because then, you know, a few years ago, you could see Steely Dan for like $100, decent
Right.
seats, Beacon Theater. That's kind of my jam. But then I saw them, you know, they're doing with the Eagles now, or bigger, kind of bigger venues, MSG and arenas. And I just said, yeah, I don't want to. I'm just not going to do this. I don't like the Eagles. I don't want to pay a lot of money to see Steely Dan as openers. And, you know, they're just going to play the obvious songs they always play, which I've already seen. You know, I've seen Steely Dan a few times already. So sitting this one out.
How many times have you seen Steely Dan?
I've seen them 3 times. Yeah. Because I'm a little late to them compared to some people.
Same.
Yeah.
So I feel as if you and I are on the same level. Should
Okay.
I tell you my Steely Dan testimony, how I came
I
to
would
where
love to.
from?
I would love to hear your Steely Dan testimony from, you know, the very beginning, the earliest memory.
Very beginning, I started listening to, I think in 2019, 2018, I was working on a profile. And usually when I write a profile, I choose one song to listen to on repeat, just so like it's my equivalent of white noise, really. Like I can't hear it after a while, but it's not nothing and it's not boring. But in this case, for the profile I was writing was on Judge Judy. For whatever reason, I chose Kid Charlemagne and I listened to it constantly for the entire writing process. And it just like every time I hear that song now, I think of sitting in one of the yellow couches at the New York Times office. Like my desk was on the, I think my desk then was on the sixth floor. So I was hiding out on the fifth floor because I didn't want to talk to anybody and just like me down Red Bull and being like, argh. And I think it came to me because I had been listening to Champion by Kanye West, right? That's the song Simple Train. And I think of as an aspiring music guy, I love music, but I wouldn't say I know enough to be a guy about it. I like to envision myself like leapfrogging from artist to song or to whatever. So I'm listening to Kanye, which who rather as because I am a Black millennial, like Kanye West is mine. He is mine. Sometimes I talk to one of my best friends who's like a Gen X white woman, and the way she describes Nirvana and like hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit for the first time is like how I feel when I listen to Jesus Walks. Well, the first time I heard it, rather. Is that sad? Probably, but it's my truth. So I was listening to Kanye, listening to the sample, and being like, what the fuck is this song actually? I'm gonna listen to it. And then I liked it. And I kept listening to it. And then I, at one point, I forgot to hit repeat and went on to the next song, which I think was The Caves of Altamira. And I was like, man, this song kind of goes too. And so I started listening to the album, but in secret, in total secret, because I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I think I had vaguely heard of Steely Dan. And so this was, like I said, 2018, 2019. So I was like a woman, I was in my mid 20s. But I hadn't, I think I had broken up with my white boyfriend like 2 or 3 years prior. So I like from him, I got Simon and Garfunkel and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and like Bella Fleck. Oh, God. Can you imagine Game of Thrones, Bella Fleck? What was I doing? Anyway, so I'm listening to Steely Dan. It's my secret shame. And then I think over the pandemic, I forgot about them. It came back on Spotify Shuffle. And I hate to give the Spotify algorithm any credit because like I miss searching for music on LimeWire. Like, not in a fucking record store, like a real person, but just like downloading something weird on LimeWire and being like, what is this? But then I heard for the first time the song Peg, my love fucking church. I was like, this is the greatest song I've ever heard in my entire life. just like little explosions of pleasure happening in my ears. And I couldn't stop listening to Steely Dan. So I did what I always do when I feel bad about something. I call my mother and I said, "Mom, did you ever listen to Steely Dan? Because I was looking for someone to blame." I was like, "Oh, this music is so pleasing to me, but it also like, it doesn't feel completely new to me. I don't know. Maybe I was stoned, but I was like, I need to talk to my mom about this." And she was like, "Oh yeah, I love Steely Dan." My grandfather used to play that album with Caves of Altamira and what's the name of the song that I was just talking about?
Kid Charlemagne?
Sorry. Yes, and Kid Charlemagne. What's the name of that album?
It's called The Royal Scam.
Thank you. Yes, my grandfather would play the Royal Scam all the time. And so she had these like very sweet childhood memories of listening to that growing up. And I think, I don't know, maybe I intuited them when I was in her womb. Anyway, it made me feel really good that my mom also listened to Steely Dan. And then, as I do with every interest I have in my life, because I was raised as a Christian and there's no higher love than proselytizing, Steely Dan, loving Steely Dan became my personality. And once I was buying like abhorrent merch, do you remember those like very expensive Steely Dan sweatpants that went on sale a few years ago on Twitter? Oh, yeah. They were like $100. And I was like, I don't know if I should buy these. And I was asking a friend about it. And he said, "Jasmine, you are the hope and dream of the slave." And I was like, "You are right. I must own these Steely Dan pants. I ain't got no kids." And they make my ass look great, so which makes me love Steely Dan even more. But now I just love Steely Dan. I love Yacht Rock. I've gotten into, in Park Slope, there's this restaurant that they have open bar karaoke on Thursday nights. And I'm like, I'm not yet ready to do a Steely Dan song, but like that's what I'm training for when I do everything else, because I do think that it's sort of a musical peak for me.
So when you were first listening to Kid Charlemagne and Caves of Altamira, especially, because that's like, it's a bit of a deeper cut, and that's also one of my absolute favorite Steely Dan songs. What about Caves jumped out? Was it just the groove, the horns? Do you remember? Was it just kind of a visceral reaction?
That I liked it. Yeah. I think maybe unconsciously, one of the things that I respected then and still do to this day in Kanye West is his ability to find great samples, right?
Yeah, like we listen
to a lot of all of the great like hip hop songs that are on the radio now are samples from like the most obvious songs from the most obvious places, like fucking Puffy's son doing Can't Stop Won't Stop, like a remix of Crush on You, which is a sample of Jeff Lorber's like Rain Dance or whatever. It's just like it's too obvious.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated like the sort of searching that Kanye did, especially as a huge fan of like A Tribe Called Quest or you know, a bunch of other people who like made a whole career out of this. But I think when it came to the case of Altamira, yeah, the fact that it literally just went to the next track, I forgot to hit repeat. And I don't like, this is going to sound stupid, I don't always like listening to new music. Like if I am cleaning or sort of like pooping around and I just want some background, like I'll put on some new music and just see what catches my attention. But when I'm working and I'm really focused, like I hate a jarring like newness or novelty, because I need to like be in a very familiar and sort of almost rote space, even if it is like the funkiest jams of all times. So the fact that I heard this new song and it didn't completely trip me up or honestly like throw me off of my game was the most striking thing. And I think it's because it's a really fucking good song.
Yeah. Well, I've talked about Kanye on the show before as being, you know, for a lot of people, a sort of gateway or inspiration. And I was in college when I think the first two, was it The College Dropout and Late Registration? When those two came out, I was actually in college and I remember just being like blown away and everybody was obsessed with Kanye. But then it was weird. I missed a few albums in between. Like I missed Graduation actually, because I was abroad and just doing other things with my life. I wasn't listening to new music for whatever reason at that time. And then a few years after, I was with an ex-girlfriend and she was playing Champion. And then all of a sudden, I hear the Steely Dan sample and I kind of was like, hey, do you know who this is? This is Steely Dan. And she's like, what? Like, she didn't know what it didn't mean anything to her. But for me, it was like a huge deal, you know, because I was, a big Dan fan. So, yeah. And Kanye actually wrote a letter to Donald Fagen because, yeah, they're not like, you know, quite a few hip hop, they've appeared in quite a few hip hop songs as samples, a lot of sort of
Some
classic
other ones.
Steely Dan. What are some other ones?
Yeah, what are some big ones?
Oh, well, De La Soul,
Oh, of course.
I
I
know
know
is,
I'd love you better. Oh my God. It's also the oh yeah. I think everything that I just said about listening to Steely Dan was true, but I must have at some point because I remember getting my CD of 3 Feet High and Rising when I was like 15, 16. And I Know was my favorite song because it's the best one on the album. And at some point, putting two and two together and being
There you
like,
go.
those are the guys from the De La Soul album. Yes, thank you. Duh, of course.
Greetings, girl, and welcome to my world of phrasing right up to bat. It's the Daisy Age, and you're about to walk top stage, so wipe your lottos on the mat. Hip hop love, this is, and don't mind when I quiz your evolvements before the sun. But clear your court, cause this a one man sport, and who's better for this than plugged one? Don't have to worry about me squashing other deals, cause they've already been squished. Freeze a frame of our moves the same, wish we can continue right behind the bush. You'll stay with me, I know this, but not because of all my earthly treasures, or regardless to the fact that I'm past the noose, but because.
Yeah, that's one. I think Ice Cube sampled both the Fez and Green Earrings, which are both on the Royal Scam. So maybe that's somewhere in there.
May I cut this dance to introduce myself as the chosen one to speak? Let me lay my hand across yours and aim a kiss. We don't want no 8-ball. Do you like 8-ball?
Oh no.
Yeah. We don't want no 8-ball. Do you like 8-ball?
Oh no.
Bank it in your side pocket.
What is this? Some old bullshit.
Hey yo, hey yo.
What? Took a sip and had to spit, cause I ain't with that beer called the OE, cause I'm OG. Ice Cube down with the STI. You looked and it was gone. Grabbed me a 40 just to get my buzz on, cause I needed just a little more kick. Hooked like a fish after just one sip.
Yo.
Put it to my lips and ripped the top off. 8-ball done dropped off, cause St. Ives hopped off, and my hood won't be the same after Ice Cube take a St. Ives to the brain.
Yo.
And loke up. Matter of fact, you know what? Let's bail to the store, you broke what? Dig deep into your dickies, grab something.
Why have millennials like glommed onto Steely again? Like, I know that as much as I would like to think that I'm unique and special, that's all about Steely Dan. Where did this come from?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I mean, there's a lot of different theories going around. I mean, Donald Fagen himself has weighed in and said that maybe it was like developmental psychology that millennials were hearing this music as like, you know, toddlers from their parents and something, you know, the wires got in. But I actually think one of the big things, sort of like what you were talking about, was through samples in hip hop, like Kanye and De La Soul and Usher and all these guys, you know, sampling Steely Dan made it cool. You know, like De La Soul was like, Steely Dan is great. Here's, you know, listen to this. Or, you know, Organized Confusion, Walk Into the Sun, another like super hip hop album that like, you know, hip hop aficionados always like cite that as like one of the greatest East Coast rap albums. And like, there's a sample of Green Earrings in that. So maybe something in there. That's one of the main theories. I mean, there's a bunch of possibilities. Yeah, I don't know.
Yes. I also think that, and maybe this is, I mean, I think this is portraying my personal bias more than anything, but like when white people can be funky, not just make good music, not just like make a bop, but like there's some real funk into it. That's why I know who Michael McDonald is. Why do I know that? I don't need to. But I think like I'm just sitting here thinking about what happened to me when I heard The Case of Altamira for the first time. And I'm sure I just started like tapping my foot or like bopping my shoulders because it's completely irresistible. But again, I think it's just so surprising how like juicy the funk is that it's like authentically, like, you know, it's blue, it's close to Blue-Eyed Soul. I would say they're like going to the same school, but not in the same
Yeah.
class. But like, the sad truth is, I think that when white artists adopt some tenets of Black sound, like they become wildly successful. And like, I'm the person in line to buy the hits. Like, I fucking loved Justin Bieber when he first came out. And I went back and I listened to Baby this past weekend, and it's because it features one of the best Luda verses to date. You know, Justin Bieber was trying to. Yeah, Justin Bieber was like putting himself next to Usher and Justin Timberlake. Oh, I'm sorry, Justin Timberlake is putting himself next to Usher. I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but mostly like
Now it hits.
it's so. I think the best thing about Steely Dan is like you listen to it and you're like, damn, those white boys are really going, or those white
No,
men. Wait,
they
older for
were
me.
boys. They were in their
They're boys,
20s when they
and
did. Yeah.
it's fucking good. I wonder if that's like, you know, in a manner similar to the Beastie Boys, where you just like let them hang around because you're like, damn, like can't hate. It's kind of fucking good. Let's let them rock.
Yeah, the Beastie Boys are a wild example because they're just really just, you know, some white boys doing rap and then they blew up. I mean, it's just Steely Dan, at least some of the musicians that play on Asia are black. So it's kind of a mix, you know, like the drummer was black. So
Ooh.
yeah, Bernard
Okay.
Purdy, who actually played on a lot of like Aretha Franklin albums. And so maybe
See?
that's what you were drawn to on some level.
There you go. It's like, and I realize I'm just throwing out the most random music examples too, because I haven't spoken to anybody else before you today, which is sad
No,
because it's 2:30.
no.
But I, like, in a manner almost similar to Michael McDonald, I fucking loved, I grew up loving the song Change the World by Eric Clapton. I'm like, I'm very reluctant to admit this for obvious reasons. Like, I was like, that's a great fucking song. And then one day I looked it up and Babyface produced the song. It's just, I do think it makes perfect sense that a lot of the studio musicians for Steely Dan were Black musicians or musicians working for Black groups, because there's so many fingerprints of Black American music, whether it's soul, whether it's R&B, whatever, whatever, on Steely Dan's imprint. And you know, and also those boys were just like singing about what they knew, porn. Losing yourself and your ego, like hanging out with your buds, it's verisimilitude.
Yeah. Why do you think you had to call your mom and ask for permission to be a Steely Dan
I should not put my mom on blast like
fan?
that. But growing up, so I have four younger sisters, and we like did a lot of extracurriculars, and so like a lot of my childhood memories are being in the minivan. My mom driving us around to dance competitions or after school, what have you. And in the car, obviously, it was her music all the time. And that was a lot of, it was very foundational for me when it came to figuring out my music taste. But the thing my mom would do sometimes was to racially segregate her music choices. She would make herself mix CDs, and one of them was called Sprite. And the other one was called Coke. And like the Sprite one had like Three Dog Night and Simon and Garfunkel, and the Coke had like all of Motown or whatever. So I called her almost to say, like, are these the white people from your Sprite like CD collection
I
or
see.
something? But I think I just, I probably was, because like I said, I was 25, 26, like deep in the delusion that I was cool. Right. And then I was listening to a lot of like hip, young, sexy radio. And so when I came across something that was quote unquote nerdy, like I needed to attribute it to someone. So I was like, oh, you must have played this for me. And that's why I like it. And she said, no, I never played Steely Dan for you, but also I love Steely Dan. So yeah, I think more than anything, she showed me the various ways in which we all eventually become our mothers. And I, and Steely Dan has helped me realize that I'm slowly but surely and just becoming my mom.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of I was looking up some of your other profiles, you know, in terms of the artists you usually cover, you know, I saw like Kalayla and was it Rina Sawayama? You know,
Yeah.
you wouldn't necessarily put Steely Dan into that mix, you know, because it's music that's usually considered, you know,
Totally.
boomer.
But listen, man, gun to my head. Be like, name the most amount of tracks, the highest number of tracks from each of those artists, or like gun to my head, sing a Sawayama song like word for word, lyric for lyric, or sing a Steely Dan song. I know which one I'm choosing. I'm choosing Tag by Steely Dan.
Yeah, I kind of went through a similar kind of transformation because in college I was like, no, I love indie rock. You know, that was my kind of my beat. You know, that was my thing. And at first, when I was like listening to Steely Dan, I didn't tell anybody. Like, I kind of kept that, you know, between myself and maybe like one or two friends, because at that time, it was like super embarrassing to say that you listened to Steely Dan or like Fleetwood Mac, some of these other
Oh,
groups
totally.
that now they get a lot of respect. So, but
Once I
there
left
was, yeah.
in my, so the New York Times office is in Times Square. And my first or second year there, I left the office and I was descending into the subway. And some girl comes up to me and she's like, "Are you free?" Like a young woman of color comes up to me and she says, "Are you free tonight?" And I said, "Why?" And she said, "I have these tickets that I won. I'm not able to use them. I have class, but like I just want to give them to somebody. Like, take these tickets." And I looked at them and I was like, "Fleetwood Mac at Madison Square Garden. Who would want these?" And then I brought them into the New York Times office. And undoubtedly, like some 40-something woman was like, "This bitch is stupid. Let me take these Fleetwood Mac tickets from this poor 23-year-old." And now 7 or 8 years later, I think about it all the time. Every time I listen to Rumours, because I'm like, stupid, but I was too young to know. And I feel that way about Steely Dan too. Like, why were we embarrassed? That's insane. But there was like a, I don't even think about the band itself, but maybe about the era, that
Era.
era that hadn't yet come back into total vogue. And, maybe
It's
we
like
were
those
just.
glasses, you know, for a while, like those really uncool kind of dorky glasses, like that you always, if you're watching late 70s, 80s movies, they're always wearing. But now,
Now look at my glasses.
I know. But now that's
Exactly.
cool. That's like nerd
Now it's
core or
cool.
something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm interested in your comment about listening to one song on repeat. You know, why do you think you have that ritual? I mean, you kind of talked about it, but it's like, why do you think what inspired that ritual, and what are some other songs that have also
Oh.
accompanied certain profiles, and what about them?
Totally. I think I do this to myself because, like I said, I have four sisters and I grew up with a lot of noise in the house. Four sisters, a brother, a dog, loud parents, you know. And so I love white noise. Anytime I need to go to sleep, I put on my airplane sound and I'm knocked the F out. Every time I get on an airplane, I'm knocked out before we take off. But I tried to write to white noise and it just made me sleepy. So I think in college, actually, I started writing all my papers to girl talk because I went to college in 2008 and that was the music that was in vogue. But there was something about like the endless stream of noise that eventually like faded into nothingness for me, or to a quiet that actually would allow me to think. And I think I did not write a single paper or article without listening to Feed the Animals or All Day, probably until I was like 23, 25, just all the time. But yes, now I write, every time I write a story, I listen to the same song over and over and over. And like sometimes it's thematic, but sometimes I'm like, "Jasmine, that's very cutesy. You're only doing this so that one day you'll go on a podcast and people will be like, 'What song do you listen to when you write your story?' So I can have a cool answer." But the last, when I wrote a story about Questlove a few years ago and I kept listening to Grazing in the Grass, initially the Hugh Masekela version, but then the whatever connection, the version with the lyrics, I just over and over and over and over again. I listened to Nothing from Nothing by Billy Preston over and over again for one song, for one story. I don't remember which one.
So oldies usually?
I'm sorry.
Oldies
Oldies always.
usually?
And actually, no, once I didn't want to write a story. I don't remember which story it was. I was avoiding it so badly that I was like, I can't start writing the story until I memorize every word of the 34-35 remix with Ariana, Doja, and Meg. And Not until, and I think I like sent my best friend a voice memo of me rapping the entire thing, and then a second voice memo being like, you don't have to listen to that, I'm so sorry. And then the time that I was like most avoidant and I was listening to a song over and over, but I wasn't writing anything, I was like, oh, I should learn the words to this song, was Pata Pata by Miriam Makeba, which is famously not in the language that I speak or read in. But I was like, you know what? Phonetically, I'm going to memorize this entire thing. And then and then I will be able to sit down and write my article.
Okay.
But yeah, they're usually oldies. They are by and large pretty funky, which I've used so much in this chat that it's almost empty. But you know, I don't really like cars that much unless they're deployed right. And these are songs in which they are. And they bring me, it's almost like they keep me company, because it, like, do you remember when we were in high school and we would have to like get all these tips about how to best set ourselves up to succeed at the SAT? And it was like, oh, if you have a mint in math class, like also eat a mint when you're doing the SAT, because all the math will come back because it's during the power of our senses. It's a little bit like that. I just like, when I am working on drafts or working on a story piecemeal and I need to get in the zone, like I just know that I can turn on a song and then go back to where I was last time I left off. It's like I also think I love clever lyricism. And once I found out that, and actually you'll be the person to tell me if this is true, but that a foreign movie, the foreign movies referenced in Peg referred to pornos, I was like, I'm in. Like, whatever part of my brain loves the Beastie Boys and loves just like dumb, stupid boy things, I was like, yep. And it all came full circle, because once my mom and I were listening to Steely Dan, and I got to tell her that's what that meant.
Yeah.
Is it true though?
It depends on who you talk to. I mean, they'll never say, they rarely tip their hand, you know, Donald and Walter, you know, Steely Dan themselves, they rarely tip their hand. And then fans tend to kind of argue about what, you know, these songs mean and what the variant, because there's a million references in their songs and they could, often there's multiple possibilities. So I've heard that. I've heard that as a possibility. And like Peg herself is a porno actress. Like I've heard that. There was another theory going around that Peg was actually based on Peg Entwistle, who was a semi-obscure Hollywood actress who jumped off the Hollywood sign.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, what? Which is, that's a real thing that happened. And so like the part of the song where it goes, you know, then the shutter falls, you see it all in 3D. It's your favorite foreign movie would be maybe the moment of, you know, which is taking one of the most upbeat, joyous songs and turning it on its complete head. If it's, if that.
Ooh. Now I'm like, oh, I can still listen to Peg. Oh no, no.
Yeah. Another one of my absolute favorite Steely Dan songs is Time Out of Mind, which there's little debate about that one. That's a song on Gaucho. You should check that one out. That one's really, really fun. It's kind of like the Peg of that album, because it's just such a banger. It's like almost a disco song. And it's about heroin. And Walter, you know, one of the Steely Dan guys, was on heroin. But it's like an ode, like it's a joyous song. But and I thought it was about doing cocaine, because it sounds like that. But then when I found out it was actually about heroin, I was like, okay, this is a really dark fucking song.
You're like, I thought it was about one of the fun drugs. No.
No. So yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that really appeals to Steely Dan fans, is kind of the dissection and you know, unpacking these sort of dense and perhaps ambiguous or, you know, complex lyrics. I usually, when I listen to music, I'm in it just for the tunes. You know, I'm more of a melody or I respond to the vibes of it. I'm not really a lyrics guy at the end of the day, but Steely Dan kind of combines everything into one package that I love. So I do love, you know, I love the tunes first and foremost, but like it's a lot of fun. Their lyrics are just, they're so witty, and they jump out at you with, you know, some of these references and turns of phrase. So
Yeah, they're almost like, and I'm certainly overstating it here, but it reminds me a little bit of Dali paintings, you know, because it's so close to being normal, but something is so like inexorably weird about what's going on. It's sort of like the opening scenes of a dream or the part of the dream where you're like, wait a second, this isn't right. That's what it feels like to listen to the Caves of Altamira, because I'm like, what are these guys even talking about?
Sad design could be the very same. A woolly man without a face and a beast without a name. Nothing here but history. Can you see what happened?